I'm sure that clergy aren't meant to have favorite Bible passages, but Proverbs 8 is one of my favorite Bible passages. This part of the book of Proverbs that we heard just a little while ago, that Karen read to us, our first reading from the Hebrew scriptures, is commonly known as the Hymn to Wisdom, or as the headings in the New Revised Standard Version, which is the preferred and authorized version for our diocese, the gifts of wisdom and wisdom's place in creation. This section of Proverbs is a beautiful, poetic reflection of God's intimate involvement in the created order, and of wisdom, a holy feminine word in the Hebrew script. And this wisdom is intimately intertwined with the work of creation. So intertwined that theologians have speculated that wisdom might be interchangeable at times with spirit, and that this passage is an expression of the divine feminine at work. Yes, wisdom is created by God, and at the same time is an attribute of the divine. A femininity reflected in other places by the naming of God as spirit in Greek, Sophia, again a feminine form, wisdom. We are pointed repeatedly in scripture and in tradition to a God whose very nature is non-binary, not male nor female. The image passed down to us by mainly male writers, and certainly those writing with a patriarchal background and a masculine-centric lens, may gravitate towards male images of God and male actors in the stories, but they cannot squash the voices of women or the participation of women. Nor can our images of God be defined by gender. There are masculine and feminine elements of the divine held together throughout scripture. God is essentially queer, refusing conformity to our limited categories, a gender queer, gender fluid, intersex, beyond labels God. In her book, Queer Virtue, the Reverend Elizabeth M. Edmond talks of the inherent queerness of Christianity, and that the task of quote unquote queering the tradition, as some have called the endeavors of many LGBTQ2SI++ theologians, is less about bringing something to the tradition, but reading from the tradition neglected aspects of what's already there. What a contrast to the misogyny and the patriarchy, which is so often drawn from or inspired by the many interpretations of scripture from toxic groups of uninformed wannabe social media theologians, often called the Theo Bros. The same group that perpetuate the horrific purity culture I was preaching about this morning, but add to that, somehow miraculously, a level of bad theology that I do not have time to unpack here. And it's not just in social media that we see this misogynistic theology, but lived out in the lives of branches of the church that are unapologetically sexist and will not allow women in any leadership roles. These churches are, of course, the ones which like to dress up their hate as adherence to scripture, and we find them often tolerating abuse, encouraging homophobia and transphobia, and the oppression of anyone not white, not cisgendered, and not straight. Their overbearing and dominating male leadership is a small-scale model of the kind of authoritarianism such communities admire and embrace. In today's Hebrew scripture, we see God's deeply intimate relationship to creation, and we should be admonished to reconsider our own relationship to the earth, our own responsibility to nurture, to care for, and steward the gifts of earth, rather than to strip the planet of its resources and destroy its beauty and wonder. But there's a whole series of sermons right there, and I'm going to rein myself in. If we see again the deeply feminine expression of the divine in today's words, then perhaps we would see the undermining, no, the deep challenge to patriarchal, misogynistic theology, which predominates particularly in Western-based theologies. And I just want to say a few words about our second reading from the book of Revelation. I've said this before, and I'm happy to repeat myself, but anyone who's heard me preach knows I'm happy to repeat myself. I will say again, please do not get your theology from Revelation. I mean, please don't try and literalize your theology from the book of Revelation. Don't literalize what is a vision, what is meant to inspire, to give a sense of wonder, of transcendence, of the awe-inspiring otherworldliness of passages such as this evening's glimpse of the worship of heaven. Leave it. Let it be. It's like a code for which we do not have the key. It's like trying to interpret one of your friend's dreams over coffee in the morning. I can say definitively, we're not going to work out what it means. But I can say what it definitely isn't. It is not a prophecy of some kind of end times that we are still awaiting. I did like that this evening's reading had a rainbow in it. We've got one of them at the back of the church. Though I don't get, and I did wrestle over this for a little while with my mental imagery, I don't get how a rainbow could look like an emerald. But then I don't think I meant to get it. I think that's the point. In short, having preached on purity culture this morning, I realize we have a continuation of some of that same idea this evening. But we are really reminded in this evening's readings, as is so often the case, alongside the material that has been used to harm and oppress, which are there in our scriptures, there is also wonder and beauty, poetry and encouragement to live out the values of respecting creation, loving one another, valuing the feminine, and being taken out of ourselves for just a moment to see something beyond our imagining, something transcendent. Thanks be to God.